The mourning process for those who admired and loved Kobe Bryant took on many forms, most of which were in a very public way.
There are hundreds of murals painted by artists who were inspired, not because he is a basketball player, but because Kobe was an artist too.
I'm Steve Gregory, and this is The Death and Life of Kobe Bryant. Jimmy Kimmel was a close friend of Bryant's, and Bryant was a frequent guest on Kimmel's late-night talk show. Kimmel would go on to host Bryant's memorial at Staples Center and spoke about the many murals created to honor his friend.
And not just in L.A., across the country, in Kobe's hometown, Philadelphia, in Italy, in India, the Philippines, China, New York, Phoenix, Boston, for God's sake, in places where he would be booed on the court, Kobe is missed.
So we're here at 5522 Venice Boulevard, Mid-City.
Mike Asner says he's a Kobe Bryant superfan, which includes his love for the murals painted of Bryant, Bryant's daughter Gianna, the Lakers, and Los Angeles.
This is a very well-known mural by an artist, Gustavo, who goes by GZ.JR. It's the Leave a Legacy mural that was done actually with the Lakers before the playoffs last year. And Gus did an amazing job. He added Kobe and the trophies after they won the championship. So this is one of the most famous murals throughout the world, and people have come here to reflect and to show their respect and gratitude. I mean, you're looking at, from my opinion, a beautiful work of art, but there's a lot of messages here, obviously, around social justice and what this team has, and what the city and what the world has gone through in 2020. But you know, this team, and specifically for me as a huge Lakers fan, means a great deal. Overcoming adversity all year, pushing for what I believe is right in the world, and they won the championship, and this reflects them winning that championship.
After learning of Bryant's death, Asner says he was so moved he had to do something, anything, to honor Bryant. So he decided to create a website which shows the locations of all the known murals of Bryant around the world.
And it started with an Instagram page, at Kobe Mural, then a KobeMural.com website. And at this point, there's an interactive map with over 400 murals around the world. And my whole purpose here is just to make it easy for fans. It's not a money-making operation, it's not a business, it's just purely out of love for the fans, the families, and obviously Kobe and the Lakers.
So how do you know where the murals are at?
You know, it's funny, in the beginning it took a lot of work to find them and just to get the accurate information, because it's hard to get accurate information sometimes these days. So in the beginning I would really dig and scour and try to find these locations, but over time fans are now reaching out to me, which is really impressive and beautiful. It's been a really nice community of fans around the world, every corner of the world, who at this point, when they're working on something, they notify me, and then I'm just going to notify the fans. So, you know, there's not a lot of great things on social media sometimes, but this is one nice positive from my perspective to bring us together to do something to give back. And, I'm just grateful to the artists and fans around the world.
I assume LA has the most murals.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to keep track, but we're over 400 throughout the world. I believe about 250 plus in Southern California. That includes Orange County, where I'm from, up to Los Angeles. There's murals all over the country, in the United States, but almost every corner of the world, there's a mural. And what's really cool is we've seen a lot of murals where he grew up in Italy and he spent time in France. He would travel to China and Asia in the off season and left a really big impression there. So I'm just amazed and humbled and grateful for this work that's being done. But every artist has their own unique style and perspective, and that's what makes us really special. It's not the same thing everywhere. It's really unique each time something goes up.
And one of those artists goes by Artoon. Artoon, whose real name is Art Gozakuchikian, says he was so moved by Bryant's death, he painted an entire mural on the wall of a business in Studio City within 24 hours after word of the fatal crash went public.
I got out of the shower, and when I got out, first thing I noticed, my phone was going off, and it was about Kobe in the first article I see, and the second, I'm opening up different social medias, and every single post was about it. And I just lay down on the bed for a while, and I'm, you know, obviously it's a big inspiration for me, and I was just trying to wrap my head around it, trying to figure out if it was real or fake. I kind of first thought maybe it was fake, but then when I seen all those posts, I was like, oh shit, this is real. Yeah, it just, and I had a date right then. That's why I was taking a shower. So I went to meet this girl in Beverly Hills, and when I got there, I'm like, you know, I kept on thinking about, wow, Kobe's dead, and I'm like, I gotta do something about this. So I left the date so I could go start the mural, and I started that night, and I pulled a 24-hour session, went and took a little baby nap, came back another 2 hours, and I finished the whole thing without even knowing 24 is, without even thinking 24 is Kobe's number and 2 was her number, Giannis. So yeah, I just jumped on it because I thought something you had to jump on right away. I mean, forget about the inspiration. You know, I've done many murals about Kobe, but it was just, this guy demands the respect. You know, he's all about L.A. He is L.A. He brought a lot of pride and inspiration to the city, and that whole Mamba mentality, millions of people are talking about it, practicing it. You know, he had a big impact. He is L.A. I looked at him as one of our idols. I guess if Michelangelo was alive, Kobe would get a statue, you know?
It sounds like he was not only an inspiration to you as an athlete, but just as a person.
Yeah, he was a good role model, good father. I just had a baby girl, so I'm a girl dad too now.
You felt compelled to put something on canvas, in this case, the side of a building. So where did you paint this, and what did you decide to do?
I had already painted the whole side of that wall, that business, and it was the front-facing wall left, and we were going to paint something else. They wanted a Marilyn Monroe, I believe, and I just wasn't really feeling a Marilyn Monroe, so I kind of took the weekend off. I went to Vegas, got drunk, came back, and that's when Kobe happened. And I'm like, okay, It's almost like you can't make this up, you know. The sign's already pointed what I should paint there. So that wall was ready to go. I just didn't want to paint what I was supposed to paint. And when Kobe died, I'm like, I'm not painting anything else but this. And I even told the guys I was painting for, I'm like, I'm going to paint Kobe. And at first they were like, oh, we don't know, let's talk about it. And I'm like, it's either I paint Kobe or I'm not painting anything, you know. And that's how pretty much they were like, okay, start on it.
What came to you? What was the first image that came to you that you had to paint?
I really wanted to show an image of Kobe kind of looking up in the sky, where in a way saying that here I come. And when I found a good picture that matched it, it was the one where he's biting his jersey. It's an iconic picture. Then, you know, I was already planning for the mural, and that's when I found out Gigi died. I didn't know Gigi died at first. Then when I found out Gigi died, I'm like, wow, there's no way. I can't put her in this. It would almost be disrespect for their family, you know? So I just started searching Gigi's pictures, kind of looking upward, and I found two images that kind of matched. And then the rest, I just... Sorry, I don't know what the mural is going to look like. I never know what my mural is going to look like, because chances are while I'm doing it, I'm going to get a bright idea and it's going to shift course. But the main concept is still going to be there. That's why I don't like to do a mural knowing what I'm... It just, to me, it's boring, because you want my creativity in a span of an hour or a couple hours while I'm sketching it, or you want my creativity for a whole week while I'm going to be painting it. So last minute, I could get a bright idea, and as I'm painting, I'm getting more ideas coming at me. So
it was a very fluid process for you.
Yeah, I never know what it's going to look like. Not even the canvas pieces.
So 24 hours. Do you remember the final thing you painted when you said, okay, I'm done, and you stepped back?
It was the shading on the jersey. And I stepped back, and I was like, wow, that looks good. It's almost lifelike. And I mean, that experience was so cool. Every time I looked up, every time I looked back, there was like 30 to 50 people taking pictures. You know, you can see I'm causing traffic. People are breaking their neck, just slowing down the traffic, looking, trying to swerve from the second lane to pull over so they can come take pictures. People, you know, bringing candles, lighting on flowers, memorials, pictures, and just posting it by the wall. It just turned into a memorial. It was kind of cool just seeing that process. You know, you do a lot of murals and not too many get that same kind of attention, and that just tells you the importance of the guy you're painting. You know, I've done many murals and nothing was really to that caliber, because within like that 24 hours I had almost about 5-6 news stations pull up behind me.
When you were, I'm sure you were in the zone, you were doing your thing, you say you stepped back and looked at it, and then are you ever completely satisfied with your final product?
No, I'm never satisfied, because I always feel like there could be more done. But sometimes you just gotta learn to know when enough is enough. You know, sometimes too much is too much, and it can be overkill. But, you know, I got this saying, my favorite piece is my next piece. So I'm never really looking forward to the one I'm doing. I'm looking forward for the next one. I've done many Kobes, but ever since he passed away, I've done two. One, the other one's on La Cienega in Venice. It's like 40 foot high. It's Kobe's daughter. And he's got angel wings, and the angel wings is turning into hands and wrapping around Gianna. It's on Globe Motorsports.
Is that a satisfaction for you when people want to take their pictures in front of it and they look at it? Some got emotional. A guy I spoke with got teary-eyed.
Yeah. Matt Barnes pulled up. He got teary-eyed too. You know, he played with him. A lot of people got teary-eyed. There was some lady that pulled up, Mara. She had that Lakers ring, and she had some sort of connection with the family. And the Lakers championship ring. You see a lot of people tearing up, and they were coming up to me, shaking my hand, thank you for doing this. And I'm like, thank you for loving it. You know, like, to me, this is more of an obligation. You know, it's like, you know, I don't want to keep bringing up Michelangelo, but we do our part. We just painting outside instead of inside.
When you talk about inspiration, and you were talking a lot about you felt compelled to do this within 24 hours, you even broke a date to do this. I mean, he must have been a pretty powerful influence on you.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't really get the motivation to jump up and paint too often. So if I finish that whole wall in a matter of one day, it's cool. You know, I enjoy it. And even though it was like 3 a.m., nobody was around, and there was no wind, and then all of a sudden these two huge like gusts of wind and leaves going everywhere, and then it just stopped again. And I'm like, was that something? I'm like, was that something? Was it Kobe and Gianna just breezing by over here? But it was crazy. My whole body just got goosebumps.
So were you by yourself overnight doing this?
Yeah, I was already. Usually during the daytime, at nighttime people are there, but overnight, that's the only time I'll get peace. It's the only time I could actually focus. That's when my phone is off and people are not asking questions, and you know, I can actually focus on the project at hand.
What's that like when you're by yourself in your thoughts and you're painting a portrait of someone who just died hours earlier?
Oh, you do a lot of thinking. Like I cried throughout that overnighter, just thinking about it, but I like it. I mean, I think most artists are nocturnal. They should be producing artwork at night. Like I said, that's the only time you can actually get some peace and quiet and peace of mind, where, you know, you have no distractions. A text message can be a distraction if I'm painting. So when there's no distractions, you could literally be locked in your zone for 5 hours and not notice 5 hours just went by.
Do you continue to do Kobe-inspired portraits or murals?
I had like 50 people asking me to do Kobe stuff, and I just refused them. I didn't want to just be a generic artist that just keeps going around doing Kobe for hire. I just thought if I was going to do them, I was going to pick and choose where I wanted it, what location, if it was going to, you know, make an impact or not.
That's to feel right.
Yeah. And art is basically by feel right. Like recently I did a mural and it was just a great mural, but I did not like it because of the location, because it was not on the big street. And even though it's commissioned, it's like deep down inside, you're like, this artwork does not belong on this street. This artwork belongs on somewhere where people could actually enjoy it, you know, take pictures of it. So, yeah, you definitely got to feel it out. I like the reactions of people.
Murals like Artoon's continue to attract fans.
What brought you to this location?
Kobe Bryant was one of my favorite players.
One of the most visited murals is tucked away in an alley about a block away from the Los Angeles Convention Center. A group of four friends recently traveled from Detroit, Michigan to visit LA, and one of the things on their list, a visit to this mural. Meet Gabby, Marcel, Milano, and a guy who calls himself Cheese. They all agree that Bryant was an inspiration, and here's how they felt about seeing the mural for the first time, told as best as possible through their face coverings.
Him just like being able to like to take his drive from like how he was on the court and put it into his family, that was really just like the most important thing I just liked about the man.
I just see a man that was passionate about his craft and what he does and put his all into it. I see greatness. Kobe Bryant was just the epitome of hard work and dedication and definitely an inspiration. Even like someone I thought of, like I just broke my hand. So I remember a photo of him when he was shooting with his broken wrist and like still practicing like in his pajamas, you know what I'm saying? So he's still an inspiration even to this day.
It was the drive he had. Everything you've seen him do, he put his heart to it. Like he literally left everything on the floor every night. People hated him in practice because he worked so hard. He literally would cuss you out if you wasn't working as hard as him. If you didn't work as hard as him, you couldn't play with him.
For me, it's like how many people really looked up to him. From the kids to the adults, he really had a lot of, like, even if you look on this wall, you got millions of people signing autographs and saying their piece to Kobe. This is dope, man. Like, he did his thing while he was here.
Everything that he did outside of basketball, he still applied the same drive, the same determination. He still put in the same amount of effort. So the fact that that was just his mentality overall was definitely inspiring. And it lets you know, like, you don't have to just stay focused on one thing. You can apply the same pressure to everything aspect of your life and, you know, just watch it blossom. So he's definitely that guy.
Just watching his legacy. And honestly, I've never been like a huge basketball fan, but seeing like when he passed and how he affected so many people around the world, you know what I'm saying? That kind of like put something on me like, oh, I got to go harder. You know what I'm saying? I got to create a legacy just as good as his.
And the feeling of seeing Kobe Bryant for the first time on a larger-than-life mural?
I almost cried, literally. Like, that was just how much of an inspiration and how dope he was to everybody. And it's just like, it's an energy right here. Or wherever you see him, it's like it's an energy. In L.A., like, honestly, you step here, you know him and, like, you know, everybody that passed that was from here, you can feel the energy. Like, standing in right here, I can feel his energy.
Coming up, another artistic homage to Bryant. And the mayor of Los Angeles talks about Bryant's inspiration in philanthropy as the death and life of Kobe Bryant continues. The mural has become one of the most popular ways to show love and respect to Bryant. The website KobeMural.com currently lists more than 400 around the world, most of which are in Southern California. But within hours of the crash that killed Bryant, another type of canvas would fast become the place for portraits of Bryant, Bryant's numbers 24 and 8, Bryant's daughter Gianna, and the Black Mamba.
Four artists, we were doing about four a day, each of us. So maybe anywhere, like for sure, from 10 to 20 tattoos a day, just for Kobe.
Mikey Montoya owns and operates Sunny Days Tattoo Parlor in Arcadia. That's about an hour east of Los Angeles. He and his artist, Ricky, remember learning about the crash.
I was actually flying in from New York, and we had landed. We had gotten our vehicle, and then we saw it. Actually, he saw it on social media. So he's like, hey, guess what happened? And we just kind of took a pause. We were on the freeway, and we both, like, kind of silent for a while and kind of in shock. That's where it took me.
Montoya says as soon as he opened his shop, he knew things were going to be different.
It seems like every walks of life was coming in and wanting to get something. Even if they couldn't actually afford a tattoo, they were, you know, getting the money together to get this number 8 or 24, just a little Mamba or anything, the colors. It was pretty wild. You know, the people showing their kind of their emotional outlet towards it all, and which I had a little bit myself, and these people getting it permanently, it was very, I don't know, like kind of sad. The emotions were all over the place, even tattooing it, not knowing these people tattooing it. It's not like their father or mother, but to me, some of my customers were like saying that Kobe was like their father, mother, or brother, or whatnot. No matter the gender, it's just the role he played, which I didn't see it like that, but now I do. Now, you know, it was pretty cool. We were doing like each artist, say there was 4 artists, we were doing about 4 a day, each of us. So maybe anywhere, like for sure, from 10 to 20 tattoos a day, just for Kobe. Or making appointments, or just even just Laker tattoos. They wanted, you know, not necessarily just the 8. They wanted Lakers. And usually, like, kind of couples came in, either friends or a group of friends, or, you know, yeah. So they were all talking about it, and it struck everybody a little bit differently. It was weird. Just especially the younger age people. Like, I would say anywhere from, like, 30... down, 25 down, they were really into getting the little Kobe tattoos.
Montoya's friend Ricky is a tattoo artist at the shop and is also a big Kobe Bryant fan.
Probably his logo itself, the Mamba symbol, the one with the snake, his main logo for Nike. That was probably the most popular one for everybody. The snake itself, the amount of scales, the amount of different shades, and just a very intricate logo. Popular request would have to be his portrait. The one especially when he's grabbing his jersey and waving it around. I forgot which game it was, but anyways, he grabs his jersey and he shakes it. That's like probably the most popular one that everyone gets. Largest one was probably like ankle up to the knee. I think it was behind the back pass to Shaq when he was number 8.
And because Ricky's a big fan of Bryant's, he says doing tattoos of the superstar over and over got a little emotional.
When they'll come in, like I would want to put like an extra effort to it, a little bit more extra time to it, just because of the emotional connection, just to make sure it comes out 120-150%. Just better than the usual tattoo, you know.
Montoya says people were willing to pay the price.
Most simple tattoo for, like, say the Kobe, it would be like $100. And that's like super simple, maybe one color, black and a color. And it could go up to like $1,000 for the portraits. I would say I did more of the smaller ones because people didn't have that type of money, you know, on the spot. But everybody wanted to represent or show their love. So $100 is way easier to come up with than $1,000. Depending on the placement, if it's on the neck, or which these young kids even were getting them on their neck because they wanted to show, you know, the Kobe 8 or 24 or just an LA in purple or yellow or gold, you know. A lot of people were getting the Kobe signature too. And I had a young guy, maybe like 20 years old, and he said that Kobe helped him get through high school, that he like had low self-esteem and he looked up to Kobe and I guess his interviews. And this kid really was the only one out of most of them that I tattooed that it seemed like it personally really affected him. Not ever meeting Kobe or anything, but he told me that this guy is like a father to me. So I was like, whoa, like after the tattoo is like, I even kind of forgot what I was doing just listening to this kid more interested in his story, you know?
Montoya says even more than a year later, he still gets a steady stream of requests of Bryant or anything Bryant-related. Coming up, the mayor of Los Angeles talks about Bryant's work to end homelessness among young people, and Bryant's creative side would be validated with Hollywood's highest honor as the death and life of Kobe Bryant continues. The grieving process for Kobe Bryant's death hit everyone differently, with equal emotion. Hundreds of thousands of people around the world have written songs about Bryant, painted murals, tattooed themselves, and even named their kids after the superstar. And while these people honor Bryant for what he gave them, a lot of people may not realize how Bryant gave back to others.
You know, and this issue is one that kind of gets pushed on the back burner because it's easy to point the blame at those who are homeless and say, well, you made that bad decision, this is where you are, it's your fault. And in life, we all make mistakes.
What a lot of people never saw was that for his philanthropy and for his business careers, it was all about making something that would make a difference.
Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti remembers the day he met Bryant.
I was a council member now at a Ronald McDonald House when he was there very kind of quietly visiting to see the expansion of this place that helps families whose kids are being treated for cancer at Children's Hospital and some of the other hospitals in Hollywood. He was there to just kind of give them some inspiration and say, hey, this trademark grit that I got, I'm going to give some to you to help you get through this tough moment.
I got the impression, the very little I knew about Kobe Bryant and watching him, I got the impression he was sort of the real deal when it came to helping those that needed help, and especially the youth.
He never wanted to rest on the laurels of, hey, I'm just a sports star. Anything that he was going to put his name to, anything he was going to help with, he and Vanessa were going to give it their all. My friend's place is a place where youth who are homeless in Hollywood go during the day. And that was the second place where I saw Vanessa's real kind of passion and Kobe's support of these kids who are, you know, going through the worst things and been through the worst things you could imagine in the foster care system, you know, being kicked out of households, LGBTQ youth, folks who have been abused. And they really just quietly poured their love into that place. Step Up on Second, which is a place just around the corner and down the street on Vine and other places where you have homeless housing and services, they gave a lot to. And then Homewalk, which was the signature, you know, bringing together of over 10,000 people a year to walk and raise money against homelessness. Kobe lent his name to be the chair, but he wasn't just kind of a chair in name only. He really wanted to know the issue, wanted to know how he could help, and they put their money and their time where their mouths were.
I had only met him twice, and he always seemed to me the most humble. He had a firm handshake, I remember, and I remember that he seemed like he genuinely cared about meeting you.
He focused, met your eyes with his. He came in to visit me after I was mayor to tell me a little bit about what he was doing on the business side. And the studio, the animation studio that he was starting, and he was so pumped up about it. I mean, his enthusiasm, you could see that he had done his research. He wasn't coming to meet with the mayor at the beginning. He had done his research. He had his pitch. He wanted to bring that animation back to Los Angeles, where Walt Disney and all these great animators had started, and much of it had gone to other states or other countries. And so he had this deep loyalty, too. I mean, that's the other thing. What other player has played for one team their entire career? He loved LA and he gave everything to this town. He invested here. He invested time here. He gave back here. And he did have just that, you know, I don't know that he was shy, but he was, there was a certain humility where he didn't really care what other people thought. He wanted to connect with you. And when you're with him, he was focused on you as the most important person in the room.
And he won an Oscar. Who knew?
Well, if anybody could go from, we have to come up with a new category because, you know, folks who win the Oscar and the Tony and the Emmy and everything else, I don't think anybody's won a championship and an Oscar. Maybe it can be corrected, but that's a pretty big jump to go from winning a number of championships, 5 championships, and then an Oscar. That's a pretty phenomenal run.
And the Oscar goes to Dear Basketball, Glenn Key and Kobe!
March 4th, 2018, Kobe Bryant wins an Academy Award for Best Animated Short Film. The six-minute film is based on a poem Bryant wrote and was published back in 2015. Backstage, I had the chance to ask him about his win and about his collaboration with award-winning composer John Williams. Former Disney animator Glenn Keane also shared in the honor and talks about working on the project.
Kobe, congratulations.
Thank you.
Steve Gregory with iHeart. I wanted to ask you about how much of this project put you out of your comfort zone, and what was it like working with John Williams?
All of it put me out of my comfort zone. my daughter gave me the best piece of advice. I was a little worried about turning this into a film. I'd never done that, something like that before. And we were in a house, and we were talking about it as a family. And my little 11-year-old Gianna goes, well, Dad, you always tell us to go after our dreams, so man up. She's 11. Man up. So I had to man up and go for it. And then working with John was incredible. You know, John speaks about music as if they each key has its own soul. And it was amazing to sit with John and to sit with Glenn throughout this entire process and hear the same attention to detail that we each have for our craft. It's just an amazing experience to be able to work with John. I can't even, I mean, the guy's like, he's a real life Obi-Wan Kenobi to me, you know?
John had written this score, you know, he's 85 years old, and wrote the whole thing out by hand in pencil. Just like the film itself has been pencil. He's a old school craftsman, and with 80 instruments, he wrote that. And the day that we were recording it, he was like this little kid, just so energized.
Supercharged.
And I thought, what is going on with John?
He gave me a hug, almost knocked me over. And I was like, damn, I know I've been retired, but I haven't been retired that long, man. You almost knocked me over.
And he stood up in front of the orchestra, and Kobe and I sat there. And I suddenly realized he's never heard the music. He's just been hearing it in his head, and he wrote it with 80 instruments and recording it. And he lifted his arms, and it was this beautiful score, the score that you hear. And Kobe wanted to shout, and went, no, the red light. And when it was done, John turns to us and says, I promise you, it's going to get better.
I said, man, I thought we were done. I thought we were done. But John was incredible, man.
Yeah.
Coming up in episode 7.
Aside from being a great professional basketball player, a great human being that was also African-American.
Bryant's death leaves a large void in the African-American community, and still to come, Bryant's legacy. The Death and Life of Kobe Bryant is a production of KFI News at iHeartMedia Los Angeles for the iHeart Podcast Network.